weekdays from 4.
105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Seeing you home.
It's 5.33 and the Cambridge Film Festival gets underway tomorrow. One person is probably going to be there every single day is Toby Miller, the producer and host, occasional host of Bums on Seats. And he's here now. Hello, Toby.
Hello.
Are you going to go every day?
It's an awkward one because I'm actually not there at all this year.
Yeah, that is very awkward, Toby.
But I have teams there.
Okay.
I have teams there.
Well, thank you very much for your contribution. The next edition of Bums on those of us. Why aren't you going then?
It's a moving festival and it clashes with my job this year.
Now that's so unfortunate because normally it's in September, isn't it?
It has been in September. I can remember when it was in summer. This is its 36th year, and this is the first time they've managed to arrange for the dates, because obviously it rents the space it has at the Cambridge Arts Picture House. It's not brought to you by the Cambridge Arts Picture House. It uses that space, the Cambridge Film Trust, which puts the festival
on. So they're reliant on when the Arts Picture House and release programmes, that sort of thing, if they could fill the cinema. Arts Picture House doesn't really do blockbusters most of the time, but I guess if there's something they could fill the cinema with.
There are better times to be there than others, but it's also moving around the behemoth of London Film Festival, because that's a bit like a black hole and it sucks in some films, and it's difficult to it's difficult to program some of the bigger films which attract press attention if London's gathering them all, which is not to naysay London. They're doing what they have to do. There are many, many things that have to line up in order for the festival to be in the right place. This year they've moved to this position, which is after London. London's just ended.
And half term week, which is interesting
as well.
Half term
week, but the universities are full. And it's that combination this year. This is the first time they've been able to do that. Last year, when they were in early September,
I guess they're just coming back at that point.
Yeah,
aren't
there
they?
Were no students, and obviously, it helps to have both. So half term this year means they can have the Family Film Festival, which runs concurrently to the main festival. They can have that every morning from Saturday the 22nd onwards, every morning of the festival. And then that sort of runs until around about 12, and then the more grown up fare starts to take over. So this year is the first year they've been able to schedule that.
Mm-hmm. So, and in terms of the movies that Cambridge is able to attract, do we get, for example, premieres? Do we manage to steal a few which London might have liked to have had at their festival?
I doubt anybody steals anything from London, which is the BFI. It's a different sort of festival. I like to think of it, especially this year, especially, it's a sort of Russian nesting doll. And you look at it and you think, it's just the Cambridge Film Festival. But inside that, there's lots of other mini festivals. There's not just the Family Film Festival, which I mentioned, but there's the Cambridge African Film Festival, which is in its 15th year. So that's within this festival. There's also a small little festival of around about 4 films, I think, of new Korean cinema. There's another small festival of new German cinema, which happens every year. There's Camera Catalonia, which is Catalonian cinema. There's a silent movie strand, which is very strong, which London doesn't do. So all of these little areas, London doesn't cover those. And other film festivals don't cover them. That's very much Cambridge's
and within that, you mentioned about the need or the desire, shall we say, to get the students attending. Do people come also from outside of Cambridge? Are people getting on a train from King's Cross and then coming into the festival, you know, a couple of times,
or
maybe even across the week?
Poking at all my bugbears.
That's my job.
I don't think that happens. To be honest, I don't think that happens often enough. But I can understand it, because it's either before London, where a lot of the London-based critics obviously have that expense coming up, because press validation is expensive for London. And then after London, as it is now, you've either seen the big films or you have to have a specialist interest.
Hence the reason, I suppose, why the German Film Festival, the African Film Festival are part of the programme.
Yes, I imagine. So in the case of the Silent Cinema Rediscoveries, which is a strand within, which is on page 18 of the new programme, there are 6 films there, all of which are fantastic, all of which have new live scores. That strand will attract specialist silent movie aficionados or film buffs or whatever you choose to call them. I know that people will come to that from further abroad than just Cambridge, and I suspect that will be the case with some of the new German cinema as well, because you don't get a chance to see. That's something that needs to be stressed a little bit, I think, is that art cinemas all across the country aren't the same as art cinemas even 10 years ago. I can remember going to the Arts Picture House, where it currently is, and seeing more Japanese cinema 10 years ago than you've got a chance of seeing now. It's fairly safe.
And what's happening? So they're having a safer output, if you like.
It's just the distribution landscape is so full. And you, even in world cinema, even in art cinema, you distribute what's successful. It's not always the case, and rarities do get through, or more esoteric fare does get through, embracing the
circuit. I want to talk about your highlights, obviously, but I'm just wondering here if the likes of, not necessarily Netflix, but there are a lot of different online film services around now, and whether or not they're having an impact, because if a film would only get a relatively small handful of people if it's shown in a cinema here, a cinema there, to pop something online gives easy access to those people, who might be interested to see it.
But the people who run those online, so Netflix or Mubi or Amazon or Love Film or whatever,
Curzon, for example, have one.
Curzon, but then that's related because they have a distribution arm. They're not going to... In a way that the online world does help enormously, it's actually helped bums on seats, because we can review films that haven't come to Cambridge, but we can say at the end, because obviously we're not a hobbyist programme, we can't review films that nobody in Cambridge can see, but we can say, well, you can see this on Curzon online or BFI online. It has helped, but those are films that are still won a distribution deal nationwide. They just haven't come to Cambridge. In terms of this, almost all the films that are showing in the general programme, with the exception of the blockbusters like I use the term blockbuster, the films with stars in them, like Arrivals or Sully, those films which are screening. All the other films, they have films from Austria, Venezuela, Greece, Poland, South Korea, Ecuador, Austria. Those don't have distribution deals that will allow them to go onto those online platforms. So, and they won't be working in the budget area that will allow that to happen. So online isn't a saviour for the more esoteric fare of art house or even mainstream. It still costs money to be there, and this is money they don't have.
Let's dive into the program then, and maybe you could pick out three or so films
if that I was going.
You'd like to see, given the chance. Otherwise, it's your career, not mine.
it's all right. No, I've paid my dues. If I was there, the things I'm really upset about missing, the silent cinema especially. Because silent cinema does much better live in terms of sales than it does on DVD or Blu-ray. The sales are in this country at least, are considerably better. If you've never seen a silent film at the cinema, this is the time to go see it, because there are new scores, and the scores, and not just one man on a piano, there will be that. Neil Brand's there, John Sweeney's there, I think. There is that, but they have experimental new scores. There's the Bront Industries, who I saw, who were just two people and a bundle of laptops, and they're doing a Russian, very famous Russian film called Arsenal. I'd love to, that. Will be it, honestly. It opens your eyes to what silent cinema is.
So what are they doing? They're using in the way that I don't know. You see some performance at NMG using laptops and things in order to make their performance. They're doing the same thing here, only it just happens to be a movie playing in the background.
Yes, it's as is the Hermes Quartet are doing. Salome, and which is from 1922, and so you'll see this film from 1922, and there'll be the Hermes experiment, which is, I think, three string players and a singer, and they'll be, I don't think they'll be improvising a score. They would have, sometimes you do see that, and that can be a bit annoying sometimes, because you settle in the patterns.
These ones know where they're going.
They know, well, they will have rehearsed and they would have practiced, but it will be live, and it will be lending, and it takes these silent films away from what you might think of the silent film and simply just the piano accompaniment. And it can be a very powerful experience. And that is, over the 10 years I've been doing Bums on Seats, that has increasingly become more and more what I'm interested in, and more and more what, when I get a bit, oh, I've seen too many films, what reinvigorates me. Seeing silent films with live scores.
Almost going backwards to go forwards, isn't it, to a certain extent?
It's because you are more in, I suppose, weirdly, it's the theatricality of it, but I'm not overly keen on theatre.
Maybe you might be. Okay,
it's the experimentation. It's the relationship between the film and the audience, and you can feel that. In many modern films, you sort of lose that because of the bombast.
Okay, what else do we have?
There is also... the Cambridge African Film Festival, Strand, which is six films, and a bundle of shorts. That's very well worth seeing. There are some, if you want to see something that's vaguely familiar, but you want to see it on the big screen, there's a Michael Curtiz season. Michael Curtiz was director in the 30s and 40s, directed The Adventures of Robin Hood, which they're showing, and Casablanca, which they're showing, but there's also talks on Michael Curtiz.
Adventures of Robin Hood, and Errol Flynn Adventures of Robin Hood.
Michael Curtiz made 11 films with Errol Flynn.
Did he?
A Charge of the Light Brigade, The Seahawk, Captain Blood.
Oh, yes.
So they're everybody's favourite films, but not many people have heard of Michael Curtiz. He's very influential in people like Spielberg and Scorsese in terms of shot construction. Sort of workmanlike. He would make three. The year he made Casablanca, he made two other films that year. So a studio director, but with real vision. So there's going to be a talk on him with Adam Feinstein. We've got a little bit on that on Bums on the Seats. There is the Camera Catalonian season, which is some dramas. I would recommend Sex Chihuahuas and, I've forgotten the title. I've just remembered, which is... Where is it? Sex, Maracas and Chihuahuas, which is a documentary on Javier Gugat, who was the game, if you go back to the golden age of Hollywood and those musicals, those Esther Williams musicals.
Oh, they were dancing and sort of...
He would be the Latin band leader in the background.
Right.
And he was born in Catalonia, so in Catalan, so he went over to America, and especially in this day and age where America seems to be saying, oh, we don't actually need, you know, completely forget how immigration helps the fabric of a society. This is an example of how something that now seems so American actually came from somewhere else. And that documentary has been doing the rounds and festivals and has been very, very, very well received. And again, not to mainstream taste, but something I would be seeing every bit of if I was there is the Micro Cinema Strand, which is...
And what's Micro Cinema? You might need to remind me on that.
It's Micro Cinema is the experimental strand of the festival. So again, Russian Nesting Dolls, festival within a festival. Mm. This is the experimental. This is the really... they're looking at the work of the filmmaking cooperative in London, which I don't know enough about, though I tried to do something on them last year. But they've got a lot of very short experimental works and some new experimental works from Portugal. And it's something that, again, it's set up by James Mackay, used to be Dirk Jarman's producer, and a Cambridge academic called Yvonne Salmon. So they put this program together. So those are the things I would be at. And okay. I'm sending reporters too.
Some of whom will be reporting back to Bums on Seats, of course, but also to 105 Drive as well. And now there was a supplement, wasn't there, which was in the Cambridge News last week. If you didn't get one of those, presumably there's means either to get hold of that or to look online.
That is the programme. Yes, they have a deal through the Cambridge News, so that's how you get hold of the programme. But there are lots and lots of copies at the Arts Picture House, and I would imagine that it is elsewhere in Cambridge. It is also online. I think there's a PDF online, and I think it's mobile friendly for the first proper time this year.
Mobile friendly is good.
Yes, but it is all there online. But the paper copy, which is like a small little newspaper, and you can draw on it and highlighter. And
there's a lot, I have to say. I'm a big fan of online and all the rest of it. There's a lot to be said for something on paper where you can ring it round with a pen and work out what you're going to.
Yes.
Good. Toby Miller, thank you very much.